Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And tonight I'm going to be talking about an exceptional book, The End by Ian Kershaw. It's a book that I think gets far too little attention because it addresses such an extraordinarily valid thesis about the reasons for the way the war in Europe ended as it did, and Ian Kershaw kind of posits a series of questions to begin with. He says, essentially, almost very, very few countries, if any, fight on to the moment of utter destruction the way Germany did. The writing was on the wall for the Third Reich for at least 12 months before the country was occupied and Berlin was razed to the ground. Also, most regimes, when a leader is losing the war and threatening the very survival of the nation, will remove the leader. This doesn't happen in Germany's case, and he's asked himself, why not? Why is it that the generals failed in this undertaking? And in the final chapter of the book, he tries to answer some of these questions. And I thought it would be kind of useful to look at what conclusions Ian Kershaw comes to. So this may run over to a kind of a several part podcast, because obviously there's a lot to say. He begins. This book began by pointing out the extreme rarity of a country being able and prepared to fight on in a war to the point of total destruction. It is equally rare that the powerful elites of a country, most obviously the military, are unable or unwilling to remove a leader seen to be taking them down with him to complete disaster. Yet, recognised by all to be taking place and increasingly to be inevitable, this drive to all-enveloping national catastrophe, comprehensive military defeat, physical ruination, enemy occupation, And even beyond this, moral bankruptcy was precisely what happened to Germany in 1945. The preceding chapters have tried to explain how this was possible. They've shown the long process of inexorable collapse of Europe's most powerful state under external military pressure. They've also tried to bring out the self-destructive dynamic, by no means confined to Hitler, built into the Nazi state. Most of all, they've sought to demonstrate that the reasons why Germany chose to fight to the very end, and this was capable of doing so, are complex, not reducible to a single easy generalisation. So he begins to talk about the Allied demand for unconditional surrender. From 1943 onwards, this was a prerequisite of any any end to the war. There would be no negotiation with the Third Reich. So this told the senior figures in the Third Reich there was essentially nothing to lose. There would be no quarter for them. There would be no mercy for the Hitlers, the Himmlers, the Heydrichs, the Goebbels and the Goerings of the world. Unconditional surrender meant agreeing to any terms that were placed in front of Germany, and this would probably mean the handover and trial of war criminals. It would perhaps mean the dismemberment of Germany. Very useful piece of propaganda that fell into the lap of the Nazis was the Morgenthau Plan. This was Franklin Roosevelt's Treasury Secretary, Henry Morgenthau, who proposed that Germany be reduced to a kind of a pre-industrial sort of state, that Germany would have its ability to create further arsenals of war and industry in general removed from it, and it would become essentially an agricultural peasant country. Of course, this was largely unworkable and not something I think that Roosevelt favoured at all. But Goebbels hung upon this and said, look, here's the consequences of giving up now. This is what we have to fight on. So, Kershaw writes, the Allied demand for unconditional surrender, often seen as ruling out any alternative to fighting until the end, provides no adequate explanation. German propaganda, of course, exploited the demand in its ceaseless efforts to bolster the will to hold out, claiming that the enemy, West and East, intended to destroy Germany's very existence as a nation. But ever fewer people in the last months that we've seen believe such messages, at least as regards the Western powers. So I believe the need to fight on was an elite need. It didn't necessarily affect wasn't bought into by the whole population. There was obviously a huge and justified fear of the Red Army, of the possibility of being occupied by the Soviets. But for the most part, the ordinary Germans didn't look on unconditional surrender to the Western Allies, particularly, as being a fate so terrible that it necessitated the total destruction of the Reich. More significantly, writes Kershaw, were the implications of the policy for the regime's elite. Certainly, unconditional surrender was grist to Hitler's mill, insistent as he was that there could be no consideration of capitulation. An unconditional surrender did make it impossible at the end of the war in the West, which most German leaders, though not Hitler, would have been prepared to negotiate without also ending it in the East. The British and Americans in the West were never going to entertain the possibility of a separate peace. Any decision to negotiate in the West meant an automatic capitulation in the East. The British and Americans in the West would never stop fighting if it meant that the Soviets would be left twisting in the wind. Not out of any love to the Soviets, but out of an understanding that this had been the war policy since 1942, really, I beg your pardon, and that to break it now in 1945 would have been unthinkable. Even the Dönitz administration, following Hitler's death, rejected this option, rejected the option of surrendering to the Soviets, since it meant condemning nearly 2 million German soldiers to Soviet captivity. Until Eisenhower gave it no choice in the matter, thus ensuring that the war went on for a further 8 days of bloodshed and suffering. On the other hand, the demand for unconditional surrender did not lead to any reconsideration by the Wehrmacht High Command of German strategy from early 1943 onwards, insofar as any overall strategy existed beyond an ideologically framed self-destructive drive to hold out to the point of total perdition. It provided useful justification for fighting on to the end, but it was not the cause of the determination to do so. So we have to then look at what other factors were there that were really driving this determination to fight on to the end. The claim, writes Kershaw, that it undermined the possibility of the resistance movement gaining wider support and a greater possibility of toppling Hitler also remains a doubtful proposition. So there was one school of history that suggested that one of the problems with the demand for unconditional surrender is that groups like the Kreisau Circle, for example, who might possibly have been able to offer an alternate vision of Germany to the German people, or perhaps even the bomb plotters, the military conspirators, there was almost kind of no point in them doing that because the Allies would not have entertained anything other than complete capitulation. A new regime being able to take power and cut Germany's losses, end the war as quickly as possible, that was not going to happen. Total capitulation, occupation, and possibly partition of Germany, which of course happened in the end anyway. These were the only conditions that the Allies were going to accept. In any case, writes Kershaw, the unconditional surrender did not, of course, prevent an attempted coup d'etat. Stauffenberg and his co-conspirators in the bomb plot of July 1944 acted in full awareness of the Allied demand, and had they succeeded, would immediately have tried to seek for peace terms. But, of course, those would not have been possible. There were no terms that they could have sued from. And most of Hitler's paladins and numerous generals would have been willing, as we have noted, at one point or another to parley their way to a settlement, if Hitler had agreed, undeterred by the uncompromising Allied position. So they would have had a go. But again, the fact that the Western Allies, who might have been interested in compromise in some areas, were held rigid to an alliance with the Soviet Union where no compromise would be entertained, meant that anybody trying to negotiate with the Western powers and the Soviet Union would have found very quickly that this wasn't possible at all, and once again we would have returned to this position of unconditional surrender. So, although unconditional surrender was undoubtedly a factor in the equation, writes Kershaw, it cannot be regarded as a decisive dominant issue compelling Germans to fight on. Churchill himself later rejected the claim that unconditional surrender had been a mistake, which should prolong the war. In fact, he went so far as to state that an alternative statement on peace terms, which the Allies had several times attempted to draft, would have been more harmful to any German attempts to seek peace, since the conditions looked so terrible when set forth on paper, and so far exceeded what was in fact done, that their publication would only have stimulated German resistance. One of the theses that was put forward by Ian Kershaw is that after the July bomb plot of 1944, the final destruction of opposition circles in Germany meant that there was nobody, no other effective force to replace Hitler and therefore to take the country in a different direction. one of the reasons why the increasingly unpopular Führer, who was not the kind of figure of adulation that he had been in 1940 when Paris had fallen, but somebody who had clearly brought destruction on the country, and whose name was cursed by many, many Germans, though obviously not in public.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, the reason why he is not removed is because there is literally no meaningful alternative. There's nobody to take his place other than perhaps one of Hitler's own henchmen who were considering considering the possibilities in the final days, the people such as Martin Bormann. But we'll come on back to that perhaps in this later on in this podcast or in a subsequent one. Allied mistakes in strategy and tactics, right, seeing Kershaw, can't be aren't a kind of a full explanation. He writes, Allied mistakes in strategy and tactics, weakening their own efforts to bring the war to an early end and contributing to the protracted end to the great conflict, also by temporarily boosting the confidence of German defenders, can't be seen as the key factor. Important errors were certainly made and contributed to the inability of the Allies after the Normandy landings in the west and the Red Army's surge through Poland in the east to finish off Germany by Christmas, as they had in their early optimism initially thought possible. As we saw in earlier chapters, in the west, the divergence in strategy aims between Eisenhower and Montgomery, underpinned by their personal differences owing to the latter's overbearing personality and some ingrained anti-American prejudice in the British military elite, prevented full exploitation of the breakthrough in France in August 1944, which had left the German Western Front in great disarray. As a result, compounded by the British failure to secure the port in Antwerp and by the disastrous Arnhem, the Wehrmacht was able to reinforce Western defences and bring the Allied attack almost to a standstill for several precious weeks. The Allies never fully regained their momentum and suffered further temporary setback in the Ardennes offensive until March 1945. On the Eastern Front, the Red Army's mistakes in operational planning also meant that a massive assault in the summer of 1944, devastating though it was for the Wehrmacht, did not bring an early end to the war. A bold thrust to the Pomeranian coast, which German defence planners had feared, would have cleared the way for a much earlier attack on Berlin than in fact took place, and could possibly have brought the total collapse long before May 1945. So there were many moments where the German resolve was temporarily helped by Allied setbacks and errors. But in a way, I'm not sure whether this line of question is particularly helpful. It doesn't really explain why Germany fought on to the end anyway. And I don't find it totally convincing that the Allied failure at Arnhem gave lots of Germans a renewed sense of hope. I'd find that highly unlikely. And Kershaw writes about this, the question of what would have happened if the bomb plot had succeeded. Well, what would have happened if the bomb plot had succeeded is Germany would have had a military dictatorship. And there would have been still a demand for unconditional surrender. And this would have been something that the West, the German military leaders would have tried to subvert by trying to seek unconditional surrender, trying to seek some kind of accommodation with the Western allies. There would be very little chance, I think, of the Allied powers really granting that. Kershaw writes, with Hitler dead, the leaders of the successful coup would have been faced with the choice of either accepting the terms of complete capitulation or fighting on. Probably they would have felt compelled to agree to total surrender. The war might therefore have been over in July 1944, with the saving of immense bloodshed that occurred in subsequent months. The majority of the loss of life in Europe in the Second World War happened in literally the last 6 months of the war. And this is quite common for in the final phases of wars to be the most violent and bloody. But what would the military leadership, especially in the East, have agreed? And would Nazi diehards, most notably the SS, have gone along with it? Shored up by a new stab in the back legend focused on the image of the dead, heroic Führer, portrayed as killed by his own officers when leading Germany's fight for existence, powerful internal forces might have resisted and even toppled the new government, and civil war might have ensued. I would imagine that would be highly likely, as is often the way with these sorts of things. In the nature of things, writes Kershaw, the endless fascination of such what-if speculation can provide no answers. This book has attempted, therefore, to assess not what might have been, but what did in fact happen, and to evaluate on the basis of reasons for Germany fighting on to the end. On the basis of evidence presented in early chapters, it's time to draw the threads together of an answer. So here we get into setting aside the counterfactuals and looking specifically at what factors drove the will to fight on to the end. The population at large by 1945 was plainly not in favour of the regime or Hitler, and there was little appetite for further conflict. The people have no confidence any longer in the leadership, ran an internal report, one of many cited in March 1945. The Führer is drawn more strongly by the day into the question of confidence and into the criticism. The bonds with Hitler, writes Kershaw, at the top and the bottom of society had, it is true, at least in the short term, been strengthened in July 1944 by the failure of Stauffenberg's bomb plot. As we saw, there was a surge in Hitler's lagging popularity among the civilian population and among frontline soldiers to go from the letters home. And most of the generals, even those who were far from regime enthusiasts, were utterly dismayed by the attempt on Hitler's life, as their private diary entries and remarks, not meant for public consumption, demonstrate. But apart from this brief resurgence, Hitler's popularity had been on the wane since the winter of 1941, and by 1944 to 1945 was in free fall. Since significant reserves of his popularity did remain among a dwindling minority of the population, though, to be sure, a minority that still held power. By early 1945, however, support for Hitler was very low. The bomb plot had a strange effect on Hitler's popularity. It was something that aided Hitler's popularity because of the sense of national crisis. People who didn't like Hitler thought of all the times to be getting rid of the leader. We're very frightened about the Russians coming, and this is not the moment to be getting rid of the leader. And also, who has the right? What general has the right to decide this for the nation? By now, the Nazi Party was widely hated, writes Kirschel. As Goebbels admitted, the party was largely played out well before the end, the target of bitter resentment as its functionaries disappeared into the ether, abandoning the population. It was well understood that many of the chief war criminals, many of the party functionaries who most Germans understood to be utterly corrupt, were packing their bags and making their exits and heading and getting their passports for Uruguay and Argentina ready, and disappearing along this long pipeline out of the country. If you go back maybe a year, listen to my interview with Guy Walters, he'll explain actually what that how Nazis escaped over the Alps to Italy and then from there to South America. It's a fascinating conversation. Despite intensified efforts of propaganda, the reports reaching Goebbels spoke with a clear voice. Propaganda could do little or nothing to counter what people were seeing with their own eyes. Its gung-ho messages were increasingly scorned by a population yearning for an end to the war and inexorably turning against the regime which had brought such misery upon Germany. There's little to be said for the view that the people's community retained its cohesion and integrative force behind the war effort. The much-vaunted people's community had in fact long since dissolved, as it became a question of save yourself if you can. The idea, the Nazi idea of the Volksgemeinschaft, of everybody striving in one direction for the national interest, and the idea that if all Germans act in unison, then Germany can accomplish anything. It's crumbled during the war because it evidently wasn't true. And as Kirschel points out, it was a it was destroyed by desperation, by the idea that that Germans must now be in survival mode. Okay, so we're going to continue with this analysis into a subsequent podcast, probably sometime next week, and we'll look further at why Germany fought on to the end instead of capitulating. So thanks very much and good night. And do remember to check us out on www.explaininghistory.org. And if you're able to, sponsor the podcast on Patreon as we survive on a thin sliver of generosity from our sponsors. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.